From the Lind Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, traveling today in DeKalb with the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and the USDA reports released earlier today with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. We'll take a look at agricultural income and budgets with Nick Paulson of the University of Illinois Farm Doc team, and we'll also discuss the weather forecast today with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather. And we'll do all of that right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's begin today with the updated world agricultural supply and demand estimates, which includes changes from the grain stocks and the crop production report. In today's WASD figures, USDA lowered total corn acreage by 1.6 million acres to 79.2 million harvested acres. However, they raised the yield to 173.3 bushels to the acre. That was up one bushel. That in total dropped production down 200 million bushels, so supply down 200 million bushels. This was offset, however, by 185 million bushels, with 150 of that coming from exports and 35 of it from the feed residual and food and supply demand estimate numbers, which gave us just a 15 million bushel change in the ending stocks. It's now 1.242 billion bushels, with the season's average cash price, according to USDA, of $6.70. Here's some interesting figures that you might want to know. The feed and residual, or the feed number, represents 34.8% of the corn crop. That's exactly the same, 34.8%, for ethanol and its byproducts. By the way, that ethanol number did not change today, total usage, that is. It remains 5.275 billion bushels. Exports represent 12.7% of the corn market. The stocks-to-use ratio now stands at 8.19%. Here are some of the numbers from the soybean side of the equation. Total harvested acres at 86.3 million acres. That's down about 300,000 acres. The yield at 49.5 bushels to the acre is down 7/10 of a cent. Beginning stocks at 274 million is the same as the last month. And total production for the year was down 70 million bushels. Taking a look at the consumption side of the marketplace, exports are down 55 million bushels to 1.99 billion bushels, and residual use is down 4 million bushels for a total drop in consumption of 59 million bushels. Ending stocks, however, on those total number of changes down just 10 million bushels to 210 million. And the average season cash price for soybeans for the old crop is up 20 cents to $14.20 a bushel. Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at these numbers we just gave you from the United States Department of Agriculture and this update in January. Like me, he is traveling today. While I'm in DeKalb, you're at the iHotel, I take it, in Champaign-Urbana.
Yes, actually, two different people wanted me to present this morning, so I killed two birds with one stone, but it's kind of a busy day to do it, but it worked out pretty good. So,
excellent. So once the numbers came out, the market jumped. There weren't really a lot of changes in the bottom line. There were a whole bunch of changes that came in the supply and demand tables. Can you tell me how the market reacted and why?
Yeah, I mean, essentially you came into the report with everyone expecting a bullish or bearish report for corn, certainly. I mean, you're looking at 4 to 5 lower. You came in here, though, and you essentially, you said, you know what, demand's down, which everyone agrees with. If you would have told me, though, Todd, that we're going to have 180 million bushel drop in demand and you're going to see carryout actually lowered, I would have told you you're crazy. But that's exactly what we saw happen. And so essentially we lowered production by 200 million bushels while we lowered demand by 180. So carryout actually grew or went down 20 million bushels based upon the fact that USDA dropped harvested acres. And so quite interesting report. I mean, to be honest with you, I was I was extremely surprised by it, but you know, we'll certainly take it because, you know, as you and I speak, you're still looking at corn prices and double digits higher, especially on the old crop. Whereas soybeans, you're looking at up 20 to 25 cents.
So I do have some questions about this. Does this mean that things really just haven't changed? And my question really evolves around the ethanol number, which was the one number most people expected to be lowered, and USDA left it where it was.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Todd, I think that that was a can kicking down the road exercise. And I'm not, as you know, I mean, I want to be as bullish as can be. Of course, I farm, I work with producers, you know, but at the same time, you look at what's going on in this ethanol sector, you look at how tight margins are, and you just can't really come up with a reason why the USDA would leave corn usage for ethanol alone. But that's what they did. I think that they felt like maybe some of the adjustments that they made maybe didn't allow them to do so. And so, you know, obviously you look at exports down 150. You look at, you know, domestic use down 35, but it's hard to tell you exactly where that comes from because some of that was feed and residual. We don't know for sure how much of that's feed and whatnot. So very interesting way of looking at it, but I've got to think that maybe this changes on down the road. I think corn usage for ethanol will drop. The other thing I think, Todd, is we can't lose sight of the fact that demand is down significantly on the year. You know, when you're talking 180, that's a big drop.
It is a big drop. So while the market reacted positively, at least through the noon hour when you and I are talking today, does this portend a lower market to continue through the prospective plantings report?
You know, my personal opinion, Todd, is that at some point you've got to understand that you've got two different situations. If the USDA truly feels out on a final basis was 1.242, you know, obviously that's snug. That's 8.9% still. But again, if you're starting to carry in 1.242 into this next year with projections on acreage, usually north of 90, most people, you've got to actually keep demand constant. I mean, you can't really expect an uptick in demand when the USDA is calling the average market price 670. So if I keep the actual same demand, boy, I really struggle, actually, if you have a decent crop to keep carrying out away from, you know, the high close to 2 billion. I mean, you may even be above 2 if you end up with a yield in the high 170s. So you certainly have to understand that with demand being impacted, which is what's supposed to happen, high prices cure high prices through demand or increased production, that's exactly what we're seeing unfold before our eyes. And we have to look out into the future and ask ourselves, how can we protect against, you know, a drop later on in the marketing year?
USDA raised the yield for corn this time around. However, they lowered the yield for soybeans by 0.7 of a bushel. What'd you make of that, and how did the trade use it?
You know, we projected that corn yields would go up, but not by as much as what they did. It was a very interesting thing. I felt like yields were better. You know, as far as bean yields going down, I was a little surprised, quite frankly. I didn't think that that would maybe be the case. But, you know, at the same time, I know bean yields were awfully variable this year. So you can certainly understand, you know, where they would come from there. But a 0.7 drop on bean yields was definitely not on my bingo card today.
Anything else from the numbers that we had from USDA today or anything other in the outside influences?
You know, a couple of things. Of course, winter wheat seedings were up quite a bit from what we thought. You know, you were looking at the Jan estimate, almost 37 million acres. And, you know, the average of the analyst estimate was 34.5. So, you know, that's a big jump. That's part of the reason why wheat's not able to participate. And then whenever you look at South American production, I think there's still a little bit more room to come down with Argentina, you know, essentially coming in at a 45.5. There's some estimates clear down at 40. I think the USDA's got it right, projecting Brazil crop at 153 on beans. But for corn, there's no way of knowing. It's way too early to actually figure that part out.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Absolutely, bud. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. That is Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. By the way, I won't record Commodity Week until tomorrow morning. It'll be posted to the website later Friday. Thank you. Well, we're wrapping up our Illinois Farm Economic Summit tour of the state of Illinois this week in DeKalb, and Nick Paulson has been presenting each day. His presentation is about farm income and outlook. Nick, thank you for taking some time with me today. Farm income for 2022 and then for 2023. Can you tell me about what you think the differences might be?
Yeah, so my presentation, I guess, has come off as a bit pessimistic this week. We're coming off of two very high record income years in 2021 and then again in 2022, basically because of the higher commodity prices we've experienced for corn and soybeans the last few years. Looking ahead to 2023, we are looking for a return back down to farm income level in the range that we experienced in the 5 or 6 years leading into 2021. And that is due to expectations for lower commodity prices than we have seen the last 2 years, as well as some of those production costs catching up to the higher prices that we had the last couple of years.
And now, as the listeners know, Joe Jansen, agricultural economist, presented a 2023-24 supply and demand table for corn, showed a $5.10 average season's cash price for the marketing year. That would be for the corn crop to be put in the ground. So using that as a basis, input prices really are going to be stressing the total income that producers are going to gain out of this crop, I would think.
Yeah, production costs, you know, historically, we're kind of seeing the same pattern that we saw following the higher income years that were a result of the ethanol boom and soybean market expansion, export market expansion throughout the late 2000s into the early 2010s. And what we see is that production costs do tend to follow commodity prices, but usually with a lag. And so now we could be on kind of that other side of the price movement, where we've got prices coming down, but production costs may continue to increase for a year or two before they start to level off or adjust downward to lower prices again.
Do we know what expected incomes for this year will be like compared to last year?
Yeah, so I mean, we rely on the Illinois Farm Business Farm Management Association. Feel for what average farm income was across the state for cooperators in that organization. It was over $440,000 in 2021, which, like I said, was a record. Projection for 2022, we're still in the 2022 marketing year, and everything isn't finalized even for last crop year. But for 2022, we're looking at a farm income level of about $350,000, which, again, would have been a record had it not been for 2021. And then 2023, with the lower prices and production costs, we're looking at a return down to farm incomes on average below $100,000, which, again, is kind of consistent with what we saw in the years leading into 2021.
What are your expectations looking further out then?
Even projecting next crop year, next marketing year is hard enough. But if we look at some of the long-term projections that are out there, USDA, Congressional Budget Office, they have over the next 2, 3, 4 years, prices returning to that low $5, low to mid $5 range for corn. And if I remember correctly, I think the low $12 range, low to mid $12 range for soybeans. Again, given where production costs have reached, those would be difficult prices to try to deal with in terms of the returns that would suggest. So we'll probably have to see some production cost adjustments over the next 2 to 3 years if we actually do return to those lower prices, but a lot can happen.
Do input prices fluctuate lower, and which ones generally will move? Is it diesel and gasoline and fertilizer rather than seed and other sorts of things? And how much can they move?
Well, the two you mentioned are ones that are definitely driven by global markets, much like commodity prices are. So we probably do see the most quick adjustment and movement in fertilizer prices and energy prices, so prices for fuels. Some of the other inputs, seed and other chemicals, if you look historically at price levels, they just tend to keep creeping up, and we don't see a lot of downward movements in those. But there is more volatility on the fertilizer side. However, you know, tough to predict exactly whether those prices are going to move lower or move higher. But they do tend to be pretty closely linked historically with energy prices, natural gas, since it's an input to making nitrogen, and then also with corn. And so, you know, if historical patterns continue, we would expect some downward movements potentially in fertilizer because corn prices are coming down.
All good information for producers to have, for landowners to use, but how do they deploy it? What kinds of things can they help to manage with this information?
Well, I think, you know, not usually the primary person to give marketing advice here, but I think, you know, farmers have been in kind of a two-year pattern of best decision is always to hold on to that grain and price it later. But I think looking forward, based on where we think commodity prices are headed, probably a good idea to start maybe marketing more of that 2023 crop than maybe you have in the last few years. And then on the input side, Gary Schnicki and I have put out a little bit of analysis, particularly on the fertilizer side of things. I think some of the recommendations we've sort of made are not pricing all of your fertilizer at one time, maybe diversifying, you know, buying some in the fall, maybe doing some fall application, buying some in the spring, just so you know, reduce the risk of buying at the high of the market. And then, you know, taking a hard look at just literally the amount of fertilizer that you're using. There's, you know, there's good evidence that farmers tend to apply more than what is needed to reach their target yields or their, you know, optimal returns. And so I think there's some room to cut some costs there and reduce fertilizer use, maybe be more efficient with it and try some split application. So those are some things that farmers can take a look at.
And one of the easy things they can use to evaluate how much nitrogen, for instance, they're putting on is the MRTN, which is the in-rate calculator. It's at Iowa State University, but just search out in-rate calculator and you can put in your county in Illinois and get a good number for that county and your operation at the prices you want to use. Thank you very much, Nick. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
Nick Paulson is traveling with us on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits in DeKalb. Let's check the weather now with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, we'll begin in South America. What's your assessment of crops moving from the southern part of that continent to the northern part?
Well, Argentina's received some decent rains over the last few days. They're still in a fairly significant drought, though, with about half of their soybean production having received less than half of normal rainfall over the last 90 days. The Rosario Grain Exchange actually reduced their soybean crop numbers by a huge margin yesterday, dropping them all the way from 49 million metric tons to 37 million metric tons, which would be an incredible drop. Now, if we look back in time and see how their yields departed from the trend line, that would actually be the lowest crop in more than 35 years of record. So this would be an extreme event. And we're not totally sure we're there yet. Yes, it has been very dry. They've been in one of the driest periods on record going back the last several months, even all the way back into the middle of last year, but it has been raining a little bit here and there. There are some more storms coming up, and typically they receive the rains that are the most important from the middle of January through the middle of March. So there's still time for things to change and improve. It's hard to believe they can get a lot worse than what they're talking about right now, but you know, we're sitting here in Chicago, so we're not in Argentina. We're just looking at our maps and data.
And then if you take a look at those maps and data, does that tell you that the drought in Argentina has been involved in parts of Rio Grande do Sul in the southern part of Brazil?
Well, it has extended into that area at times, but it's been nowhere as near as dry as last season in those areas. There have been rains here and there, especially once you get to the north of Rio Grande do Sul. So we would say that the worst situation in Brazil is in that far southern state, but they only account for about 15% of Brazil's soybean production. The other 85% is produced to the north. There's been a pretty great growing season to this point from everything we can see. It's been raining and hasn't been very hot. The only area that might be borderline not doing as well as everybody else would be Paraná. But once you get outside of there into Goiás and Mato Grosso, which is the top producing region of Brazil, they've had pretty fantastic rains and they haven't had much of any heat. So we'll see how all this works out. But at this point, we're basically looking at problems in Argentina and okay conditions, at least in Brazil.
Here in the United States, what are you watching?
Well, it's been very mild, as you can note just by walking outside today. Temperatures are going to bounce around a little bit over the next few days, but it will stay very warm compared to normal all the way into the end of next week. After that, it looks to turn quite a bit colder. And in this transition from warmth now to coldness starting in 10 to 14 days, two or three large systems are going to move across the central U.S. Each of those will bring rain to the Corn Belt and the Mid-South, so soft red winter wheat areas are certainly going to turn a lot wetter. Hard red winter wheat areas in the plains could use some rain and snow, and they'll miss out on the first system or two, but once we get into the middle of next week, and especially about 7 to 10 days out from now, that's when we start to look at some opportunities for rain and snow in Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. So a pretty stormy period for the central U.S., and again, this is all as we move from this very mild pattern now to a much colder pattern starting in about 10 days.
Is the rainfall part of a larger system that is those big westerlies coming across the United States? And does this have anything to do with a waning La Nina? We've been waiting for that to happen.
Well, the La Nina is waning, and it's expected to continue to wane all the way into next summer. So the way it looks now, we should not have this La Nina for more than a few more months. All the rain that we've been seeing in California, which has been making headlines over the last couple of weeks, well, those systems have been moving across the central U.S. as well. But once they get here, they haven't had very much humidity to work with, and that's why they've been drier. We haven't seen a ton of rain with them. The next set of systems that are going to move through will be further to the south. And that will help to pull in a little bit more of that Gulf air in the Gulf of Mexico. And that's why we're going to start to see better rains in the Corn Belt and in the plains. So, yes, this all is connected, but it's a little bit too early to start saying that, oh, we're seeing rain in California, so the La Nina is over. If anything, this just shows you how knowing a lot about the La Nina condition doesn't tell you a real lot about the weather. Typically, when we see a La Nina, it'll be very cold and snowy in the central United States, but look at it now. It's super warm. It's been raining. There's no major snowstorms on the horizon until maybe 7 to 10 days out. And even in California, this is more typical of an El Nino when you get a lot of rain. And again, I think more than anything, it highlights that even if you know everything possible about La Nina or El Nino, it does not translate 100% to your weather.
Weather is always fun. Hey, thank you very much, Mike.
Yeah, have a great one, Todd.
Mike Tenares with T-Storm Weather. You can find him online at tstorm.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.